Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
How many have we won straight? Six straight?
Seven
straight? That's hard to do in the NFL.
Fix to the team. How we going to fight with each other every week. Every opportunity we get, we're just going to try to go out there and just compete.
I'm not a genie, so I I'm not going to say that I did foresee that in Jalen's future. But, you know, I knew that he had a lot of potential, of course.
I think the games, you know, this week, you know, we'll enjoy tonight, but the game ahead is going to be as tough as any game we're going to play.
I'm trying to figure out how genies know the future. I didn't think that was within the genie power option.
You're right. That's a new one. You're right. List. That's kind of like a Simsism there. Like, it's like doesn't really fit, but it kind of fits because – I don't know. It might be a special genie that does know the future. You don't know that, Mike.
I guess you would have to have, you know, a considerable amount of abilities and skills to conjure wishes out of nothing. Maybe the ability to foresee the future is something that hasn't really been developed in the story arc of the genie experience. There could be a whole stream of Marvel movies that could flow from Tua's idea that he's inadvertently thrown out there for the creative space. Regardless, last night, Jalen Waddle is who he was referring to, because Jalen Waddle has been awesome as a rookie. Slow start, but really has gotten going. Kind of like the Dolphins. 1-7 with a 7-game losing streak. Now a 7-game winning streak. First team in the history of the entire National Football League, Chris, to have both a 7-game losing streak and a 7-game winning streak in the same season. It's incredible what the Dolphins have done. But the planets have aligned for them nicely. Look, after they beat the Ravens, I could see them getting to 7-7 when you looked at their schedule. They still had to go win the games, and they did. But they had not a difficult path to get to 7-7. I thought it would end last night. I didn't know last night that more than 20 Saints would not be available due to the COVID reserve list. And no excuses in today's NFL, but that was a huge factor. We both came back, peeled back the curtain. The PFTPM, Chris Sims Unbuttoned, Joint Picks podcast was done. It was in the can. It was over. It was taped. We saw that Taysom Hill had been put on the COVID reserve list. We came back up and retaped that game, and we flipped our picks to the Dolphins. I mean, it became obvious at that point the Dolphins were going to win that game, and they suffocated them. And you had the under as one of your best bets of the week. There was 23 total points scored in the game, and the over-under was like 37 as of Thursday. So, you know, we saw where this was going.
Yeah, that's right.
Once the Saints ended up in their COVID hole.
Yeah, no doubt about it. You're right. I mean, it's tough. It's tough sledding for some of these teams out there right now. Yeah, there's not depth. There's quality players missing on the football field. I mean, you're playing a quarterback in Ian Book who, you know, clearly was not ready. And again, to defend him, nor should he be ready to a certain degree. I mean, he certainly wasn't expecting to be starting a game this late in the year, you know, for the better part of the year, being the third and fourth string type of quarterback. So it was tough sledding. But, like, regardless, what you said to start, you know, it's still amazing. Yeah, the schedule hasn't been tough, but holy crap, seven in a row. I mean, it's been impressive. Defense is special. You know, got studs all over the place. So I know the quality of the opponent's not good, you know, for most part. But the quality of play has still been pretty damn good, like we saw last night. And we saw a defense that has special players throughout and an offense that knows what works for them. And I think that's what, like, Miami's scary here these last 2 weeks of the year when they got to play the Titans and the Patriots. That won't be easy. We know that. But the Dolphins, I think the thing you take away from watching the game last night more than anything is they know who they are. They know they play a certain way. They're comfortable with that. We're going to play defense. We're going to cause turnovers. We're going to create chaos for your quarterback. And on our side of the ball, yeah, we're going to be conservative. And, you know, find a million ways to give the ball to Waddle and run the ball. And it's Gesicki and Waddle and Gesicki and Waddle. And Tua makes a handful of plays here and there, and they don't turn it over, or, you know, limited turnovers. And they're going to be tough to beat because of how dangerous their defense is right now. And that's what's kind of fun to watch.
I'm looking at their seven-game losing streak. A few of those games were close.
I know.
They were close, yes. Right? And then they beat the Texans 17-9 in Week 9, and that was the turnaround. The Thursday night game in Baltimore was when we first became convinced that – I know it's when I became convinced they could make their path to 500 when you looked at their schedule. And their defense is really good. Their offense is doing just enough. Hey, Tua had a great throw down the sideline last night to Mac Hollins. He dropped it right in. Yes, he had an interception where he badly overthrew a guy, but you're going to have some good and you're going to have some bad. When the rest of the team is as good as the Dolphins are, you can have some good and some bad, and you can overcome a periodic mistake. But Tua's looked good. Jalen Waddle's been phenomenal. There's your schedule right there. Here's the throw to Mac Hollins. I mean, it is a little underthrown. He had to adjust to the ball a little bit, but it's not like the defender adjusted to the ball and knocked it away. You know, when you're beaten as badly as that guy was, it's kind of hard to recover, even though the ball was just a hair underthrown. But they got it done. 8 sacks of Ian Book, and he was swallowed up so quickly. You know, there was some reporting done on Friday, Jeff Duncan of the New Orleans Times-Picayune, who's been covering that team for years, said that they put up the bat signal for Drew Brees and that Drew considered it. And I think Drew would have gotten the ball out faster than Ian Book.
Sure.
But in some of those plays, Ian Book was devoured before he could even get the ball situated in his hands.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, this is not an easy game, like, for anybody. I don't care if you're Ian Book or even Drew Brees. I think Drew Brees would tell you, like, well, coming back to play the Dolphins, well, I don't know if that's the game I would have picked to come back and play. You know, and then one, look at the scheme here. I mean, you don't know who the hell's blitzing, who's dropping. I mean, that's a great play right there. There was 8 guys at the line of scrimmage, 4 blitz, 4 drop. You don't know. You know, then on top of it, Mike, you know, you talk about, like, guys that can swallow the quarterback up. They got studs everywhere on their defense. I mean, corners, safeties, they got freaks of nature at defensive end and defensive tackle. You know, Miami, they're impressive. That's why they got to continue to stay the course right now with Chris Greer and Brian Flores. Yeah, the quarterback situation wasn't perfect. They missed on tackle position, the offensive tackle position. Other than that, damn, the team is good and got a lot of, like, stud players, especially on the defensive side of the ball like you're talking about. I mean, you know, 2 big people in the middle and Raekwon Davis and Christian Wilkins and these great corners out there. And you're right, Mike. I mean, with the Saints and some of the issues they have, and they weren't a great offense to begin with, they had moments of the game where Ian Book was, yes, I think, totally overwhelmed by the scheme, the play, the players on the field, and the Dolphins defense, I think, kind of dominated the Saints for the most part of the night. And I think we know they did.
I have a feeling they will be sticking with Brian Flores as the coach and Chris Greer as the GM in Miami. Although with Stephen Ross, the owner of the team, you never quite know. And frankly, I think that his infatuation with Deshaun Watson that lingered up until the trade deadline is one of the reasons why they struggled.
Sure.
The moment that that conversation ended is the moment that the Dolphins started winning game after game after game after game after game. And I don't think it's a coincidence because you and I both know we've heard similar things.
Yeah.
It was not an ideal situation in that building with the constant chatter of Deshaun Watson, the never-ending possibility that Deshaun Watson was going to show up any given day and supplant Tua Tagovailoa in only his second season after he was the fifth overall pick in the draft. It was a distraction. It was a problem. And once it ended, that's when Tua did what I had hoped he would have done back in late August, when it really became a brush fire and it looked like it was potentially going to happen before Labor Day weekend, internalize it all and go out and prove to them that they don't need to be thinking about Deshaun Watson after the trade deadline came and went. That's when he became that guy, and now they really do have something to ponder.
Yeah.
Do they
yeah.
continue this obsession with upgrading at quarterback? And when I say they, I mean Stephen Ross. Or do they ride with what they have and let Tua continue to develop and let the team continue to grow and just see what you have there instead of having this ongoing quest, this ongoing fever dream to land a franchise quarterback? That's what's motivated Stephen Ross so much over the past 10 years, and it hasn't gotten them that quarterback that he covets. Maybe they should just try to develop the one they have.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's like a bad alternative. You know, again, maybe if Deshaun Watson or Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers fall in your lap, you do it. But I don't think it's, you know, again, you better have it like ready or know that somebody's coming to town. I mean, you know, as we've talked about, yeah, I mean, again, I'm looked at as a Tua hater of the world, which I'm not. But, you know, again, you can win with Tua. We're seeing that. I mean, I think your point's real. You're dealing with, like, all that chatter about Deshaun Watson, I mean, that probably a big part in why, yeah, they didn't come together and beat Jacksonville in London and were, you know, kind of underwhelming in that game. You know, lost some games there where they probably shouldn't have, where their team was more talented. But, yeah, they get Tua. They finally go, okay, the trade's not going to happen. You know, it forces the team, the coaching staff, everybody to go all in on Tua. And now you see, even with the offense, you know, they've grown that around him a little bit. Yeah, he's not a world beater. He's not. He's not a superstar. He's not going to be Justin Herbert. You know, again, we've gotten to the point where Tua, when he throws like a 15-yard.
Go ahead. After seeing Justin Herbert against the Texans on Sunday, I may want to revisit that comparison.
Oh, Mike, stop
I'm not. It's not like these books are completed on these guys. They're either going to develop or they're not. They're going to improve or they're not. And Herbert had a pick six on. I mean, look, I know it happens to the best of them, but let's not put Herbert in the Hall of Fame just yet. Just like we're not putting Joe Burrow in the Hall of Fame.
No, why not? But Herbert had a phenomenal year. I'm not going to let one game against the Texans go. He's the starter in the Pro Bowl for a reason. He's like one of the best quarterbacks in football. Tua, we've gotten to the point where he throws one go route, and we go, look, he can throw that route. Look, he threw a 10-yard out route. Look, he is good, right? That's where, I mean, that's the reality we're in. I don't know any other way to say it. He's still good, though. You can win the football game. And to your point, when they finally realized he was the guy and they went all in on that, they made an offense that fits him with the RPOs and the bootlegs and, hey, here's a reverse Jalen Waddle and here's a speed sweep and fake that and throw the ball 4 yards over here on an out route. And that's the way they play. They kind of like have that old school. It's a little bit of a Jared Goff Rams formula, like spread you out horizontally, constantly. And then they, bam, hit you in the middle once they've spread you out with Waddle and Gesicki. That's how they do it. And, you know, I do think a lot of that is framed about, like, what you said, that they finally came to the realization, like, this is our guy. We got to figure out how to play around him. Yes, he doesn't have a rocket of an arm, but he's real, you know, he's good, and he knows how to play the game and has charisma. And, I think what you said is real. It helped the football team. It helped them come together and realize what they are and gave them kind of a main focus on the offensive side of the ball that's helped Tua and helped out the Dolphins altogether.
Jalen Waddle, the receiver they took with the sixth overall pick in the draft after they bounced around a bit through some trades, one with the 49ers to go down to 12, one with the Eagles to go back to 6. 12 targets, 10 catches, 92 yards, and a touchdown. Now, the touchdown, it was one of those. He had a couple of those, and that's fine.
It's basically
a jet sweep, but you know, it's a little touch pass to a guy who's coming by in motion, but it still counts as a reception. So he's got 96 on the year, 5 short of Anquan Boldin's all-time single-season rookie record of 101. in 2003. It's odd that that number isn't higher when you consider that the single season record is currently 149 and the Cooper Cup has a chance to break it, but it looks like it's going to be higher than 101 by the time this season's over. But Chris, you mentioned the next two games at the Titans and then the Patriots at home to end the season. A couple of playoff teams, a couple of teams that, barring some sort of a COVID outbreak, should be ready to go.
Right.
These are going to be the tests for the Dolphins. They're going to earn their playoff spot because they're basically going to win one or two playoff-style games, playoff-intensity matchups, before they punch their ticket. They lose the next two, and again, who knows how the hell it all plays out. I mean, there's that huge cluster of teams trying to get the seventh seed. I would assume if they lose their next two, they're going to have a hard time getting one of the seven seats. But these are games that will test them and force them to prove themselves and force them to earn their spot. And that's all we want. I don't care which teams get in per se. I want good playoff games. I don't want a team to slip through the cracks it has no business being
there. I'm with you.
The Dolphins have shown, and let's say this loudly so Tuanon hears it way in the back, the Dolphins have shown that they belong in one of those seven spots. Now the question is, can they get one?
Right. No, I agreed. I think they have shown, and I wouldn't be mad if the Dolphins got in. I mean, if you made me sit here today and go, hey, I like the way it's set up right now. Well, yeah, I'm fine with the way it's set up right now. I forgot that once they won, they got that tiebreaker against Baltimore, and Baltimore's out of it right now. But this would be good. Again, with that defense, as many stars as they have, you see Waddle. Gesicki is one of the better pass-catching tight ends in all of football. I mean, he's a stud. Yes, they'll be dangerous if they get in the playoffs. You know, again, you brought it up. We saw what they did to the Ravens. You know, their opponents the next 2 weeks are very similar to them. Not an easy task. Tennessee Titans, New England Patriots. It's the New England trifecta here, basically, with Vrabel, Flores, and Belichick. But I think they're going to be at least in styles of game that I think fit them, which is going to be, you know, situational, play through the defense. Neither one of the Titans or the Patriots' offenses are great to where, you know, they're going to have to worry about, oh, wait, Tua's got to do something outside the box and be amazing this week for us to win the game. No, they're going to continue to be able to play the way they want to play. It's going to be two opponents that are about, you know, physicality and mucking it up a little bit. I said muck there, M-U-C-K.
I know.
Okay.
I know.
All right. And
we got you.
You know, they're not worried about playing 20-17, 19-16 type football games. And that's a good thing for the Miami Dolphins. That kind of game fits them. Now, can they pull it out? We'll see. But they're certainly not like overmatched or have to play a style of football game that you go, ooh, I don't know if they can do this or keep up with them. I don't look at it that way. So they certainly got a fighting chance here.
That playoff graphic for the AFC is stunning.
Right?
There are going to be some good teams.
I forgot
teams that we thought to make some
spot.
Noise this year that are going to get kicked out when it's all said and done. We'll be having those conversations in just 13 days, that Monday after the season ends. We'll know who's in for sure. But look at that. Ravens, Steelers, Browns, playoff teams from last year on the outside looking in. The Chargers, who we believed in and thought were going to make a run. Hey, you disqualify yourself when you lose to the Texans. I'm sorry. I don't care what the excuse is. You lose that game, you don't belong in the playoffs.
I didn't think they just belonged anyways. I've been saying it. I never saw it. So I'm going to pat myself on the back of that one. But your point's right, Mike. I mean, yeah, you lose that game.
Well, but Chris, what's the problem? The problem then if they've got this great quarterback who's the Pro Bowl starter and deserves it, as you say? You know, is it possible that that Brandon Staley uses the going for it on fourth down stuff as a distraction from the fact that there's some deeper flaws in whatever systems he's putting in place? Because there's got to be a reason why they've lost all these games when you consider how good their quarterback is.
Well,
where's the flaw in the Chargers?
Well, it's more than that. Has he been perfect? No. You know, but, you know, you look at some of the games they've lost. Like, first off, the other day. I mean, the Chargers' run defense is the worst in football. Or it's what, top two or top three? Bottom two or bottom three, I should say. I mean, the Houston Texans ran the ball up and down the football field. You know, the week before that, Justin Herbert was phenomenal. But Brandon Staley had to go for it on fourth down every time. So they lost the game. It wasn't Justin Herbert's fault. It wasn't. I mean, they moved the ball up and down the field on Kansas City. They decided that they thought they knew the future and were going to take that into their own hands. You know, you look at the Broncos loss. Yeah, he threw a tough interception. He made some unbelievable plays. Broncos ran the ball all over them. So they got flaws that way, nor can they run the ball all that successful. It's on them to a degree to make it, or him, I should say, Herbert, to kind of make it happen all the time. And, yeah, he's young, and they went through some stretches of not maybe being their best on the offensive side of the ball. But, you know, again, I think that's what I look at. Mike, we talk about this all the time. Playoff teams, you know, you can't stop the run, and you can't run the football. You know, it's few and far between where you find football teams like that that get in the playoffs and can make a run that way. And I think that's their biggest issue more than anything.
For the Dolphins, the task is clear. Win the next two, and they are in. It gets murkier if they lose one of the next two, and it hinges on what happens with the other teams. That defensive style that they've developed, you were mentioning it earlier.
Yeah.
Having so many guys at the line of scrimmage, it reminds me of the old Steelers zone blitz scheme where you would have some guys go, some guys drop into coverage, but at least then it's conventional formation. You've got linebackers lined up like linebackers, off the ball, and sometimes that guy shoots the gap and the guy drops back. But, you know, when you see it work well, like the Dolphins are doing with seven or eight guys just lined up in a row at the line of scrimmage, I look at it and I say, why doesn't everybody do this? Because it does create chaos.
No doubt.
Because you don't know who's going and you don't know who's dropping into coverage. Now, you got to have some big guys who are capable of dropping into coverage, and maybe that's one of the reasons why more teams don't do it. But when you see something like this work this well, it really is stunning that it isn't a more common approach for NFL defenses.
Well, this is their thing, and they're one of the teams that I think has started this trend a little bit in the NFL this year, where we're seeing teams dabble in this more and more in passing situations, because the Dolphins, they made their run last year because of this defense. You know, remember that last year where the Rams and McVay and Goff, and we saw teams go into Miami, we're like, what the hell is going on? These quarterbacks and offensive coordinators are totally, like, flummoxed by this attack, a little bit like we saw again with Baltimore Ravens and Lamar Jackson. You know, first off, Mike, you know, I mean, you're right. That's the thing to talk about. And they got studs, I think, in some certain positions. It's a really well-built defense. They got two shutdown island corners, so that allows them to, if they do blitz, go, hey, you guys got it, Xavier Howard, Byron Jones, we trust you against anybody. You know, they got two really good safeties in Holland and Rowe. Rowe used to be a corner. Holland's a star already as a rookie. And then, Mike, you know, you talk about, you know, they got versatility like a New England on the inside with a lot of different linebackers. You could play D-end or linebacker. You got two big, you know, big tush hogs in the middle and Raekwon Davis and Christian Wilkins, where they can take up four gaps even though they're only two people, because they'll two gap and be big. And now you add a Jalen Phillips who's looking like he's going to be a superstar pass rusher. So they have the talent, Mike, is what I'm going to say. And then the other thing off of that, Mike, which makes it hard and why everybody doesn't do it, is with all that creativity, and this is where Flores and defensive coordinator Josh Boyer are special and making their money, is they can do it and also be sound within doing it, right? You know, there's no glaring gap to go, oh, wait, this was some crazy blitz, but, oh, gosh, if they run the ball over here, we're going to be totally ruined. They can do all this crazy stuff and still go, oh, no, if they run the ball over there, it might not be the best, but we got guys in the right spots that were still sound as a defense. And that's where they're special on that side of the ball, Mike. That's where Flores is earning his money as, you know, a defensive head coach and his experience with Belichick and all of that.
Talk as long as you want. You're not going to throw me off of the tush hog comment. You said tush hog. I don't know what to even label that as. It's not
big,
a Simsism.
Big butt defensive tackle.
And Pete asked me if I was Googling it. I'm afraid of what results tush hog is going to return. So I'm not even going to look to see whether it's accidentally a real word.
It's a football word.
That's a new one for me. There's some football words I know about after doing this for 20 years. Tush hog is not one of those, but maybe we can make it one. And I had to say something about it, because if I don't, the email box will be full of messages. How did you let him say that and not chime in? So I had to chime
in. Let me explain. Well, like guys like Christian Wilkins and Raekwon Davis, right? Like, let's look at like their
I understand. They're big. They're big. They got large rear ends.
They
just
do.
Tush hog is not a way that I would think that you would. There are other words that would be more conventional.
Yeah, that's well, yeah, saying. I know. I wanted to say big and a swear word after it. They got some big dudes in there. That's what I wanted to say, you know. But, yes, they're special players on the inside, and that allows them to be creative with some of that stuff too. Wilkins and Raekwon Davis are two of the better defensive tackles in football already. And then you match that with the scheme and some of those other guys, Mike. That's where they're a handful on that side of the ball.
Pete Demolaitis has mentioned to me a couple of times whether or not the quality of opponent should be factored into where the Dolphins currently are. My reaction to that is it doesn't matter because they're playing the Titans this weekend. We're going to find out. They're going to have to punch their ticket through a great team or two great teams. And they have gotten lucky. They've drawn some good cards with Joe Flacco.
No doubt.
And Mike Glennon and Ian Book. But they still keep winning. And they keep winning. And it's the NFL. And if you can go out there and you can piece seven in a row together, you know, you don't make the schedule, but you are facing NFL teams every week. Now, the COVID situation has been a factor. And I saw a couple of tweets from Peter King, and I think he's accurate. I mean, I've gotten numb to it already because there isn't a damn thing we can do about
it.
But it really is undermining the integrity of the game.
No
doubt. How can we say it's not?
Yeah.
With that many guys who aren't available and no practical reality other than keeping your head down and playing the games, how does that not undermine the integrity of what we're seeing when the Saints have more than 20 guys who aren't available, when they're down to Ian Book, a guy they didn't want to put on the field at all this year under any circumstances? How does that not affect the integrity of the game?
That's a great question.
But what could they have done? What could they have done?
Right.
What could they have done? Cancel the game? Play it Tuesday, play it Wednesday.
No.
You can't play. You play it Wednesday and you have the Dolphins and the Saints turn around and play the following Sunday. That doesn't work either. There's no good solution. And let's not forget, this is a business. They can talk about integrity of the game all they want. They want to play their games. That was the decision made a week and a half ago when they revamped the protocols. We want to create a scenario where the games get played and the owners get paid and the players get paid and the games get played. That's what they wanted, and that's what they're getting. And, hey, if some of the games suck because of it, oh, well, we still played the games.
Well, yeah, you know, yes. And, you know, again, I guess there's a part of me that I don't feel sorry for some of these teams. Again, we knew the other opponent in the arena the whole year. We knew this could come about. You know, and again, we've all taken it lightly, me, myself included. I'm not trying to sit here and, like, be on a high horse. But the reality is yeah, vaccinations, all that, great, great, great. We still came into the season going, COVID's not done yet. Like, we know it's still here. It's here to stay, you know, and there's going to be some issues. So, you know, I think everybody got relaxed as kind of the year went on. And now, you know, between the holidays and everything, yeah, we're seeing the repercussions of that. There's no doubt. And it is, you're right, it is kind of affected the integrity of the sport. I just, again, I'm just keeping my fingers crossed, you know, to, like you said, you know, the teams that deserve to get in, and it doesn't affect the playoffs to where we have some Super Bowl matchup where some team that doesn't deserve to be there is there because of COVID. That would not be cool. But there's, I think you're right, Mike. What can you do? This is what it is right now.
Just 9 days ago, the Saints looked like a team that deserved to be in the NFC field after shutting out the Buccaneers. They almost got shut out last night because, in part, of their COVID absences. Here's Sean Payton, the coach of the team, talking about the play of rookie quarterback Ian Book and the depleted roster that had to go on Monday night.
Look, in fairness to Ian,
I don't know.
It's impossible to evaluate his play. Just keeping him upright tonight was a challenge. And I'm sure there's some plays that, you know, we'll look at, and he'll look at the first interception, you know, is a throw he'll want back. But it's a tough position for him to be in. We had two players today getting fitted for equipment in the locker room, in the equipment room that had just arrived. I think we have a good idea of what this team's capable of doing. You know, hopefully we can get some guys back here this week and be ready to go for next week's game.
And, you know, that's all you can really do at this point. And we have seen some teams overcome COVID-related absences. We have seen it happen. But I think they reached the critical mass.
Look at that.
0-for-12 on third down conversions, -2 yards in the first quarter, the 8 sacks we've talked about, the 3 total points. That is not Saints offense, but that is what happens when you have that many Saints players who aren't available to play, Chris.
And, yeah.
Well, there have been some. My theory on the current state of the pandemic for the NFL is very simple. I think that they are just letting it wash through the facilities right now because the overwhelming majority of the positives they claim are guys who are symptomatic. Well, 2 weeks ago, the overwhelming majority of positives were guys who didn't have symptoms. So if there are that many guys, and there were 96 positives yesterday, if there are that many guys who have symptoms and that's how we're finding out they're positive, that tells me that pretty much everybody else has it and they're asymptomatic. So maybe in a weird sort of way, they're going to have accelerated herd immunity. And these teams are just going to be fine and not have to deal with it when we get to the playoffs. Now, for the teams that haven't gone through it yet, you know, there's an argument to be made. Let's go ahead and go through it now.
Yeah,
let's let
you.
It wash through now
right.
So it doesn't wash through right before the divisional round game or the conference championship or, God forbid, the Super Bowl.
Yeah, no, you're right. I mean, maybe that is what's happening. Be interesting to see. It will. It's crazy. I thought we were out of the spot where we wouldn't have like a day like yesterday where we'd go, what? It's the most, what, positive COVID results we've had in one day, right? Since it started by far. And I wouldn't have thought, you know, here we are a few days from 2022, we would be having that. But yeah, again, this is back to where we are. And teams are going to have to do their best to kind of control this thing. Certainly. The Dolphins, yeah, to this point, right, Mike? I mean, I'm just trying to think. They seem like they've been able to dodge the bullet with this conversation to a degree. Yeah, the Saints couldn't, and they played the wrong opponent too. You know, a team that was healthy, hot, on fire, and I don't care, COVID or not, we know this Saints offense is not great. This is going to be a tough offensive night, you know, no matter who was out there. It's not the Drew Brees Saints offense, but yes, with some of the COVID issues, that just compounded more of the issues against the defense that, you know, again, I know has gotten lucky a little bit with some of the quarterbacks they played and all of that too. They can't write the schedule, but I also will tell you, hey, they gave Josh Allen a lot of issues before this win streak started too. It's a real, real top-notch defense. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And the Saints, with those players missing and the way they are on offense, it just was too much to overcome.
Which game did they give Josh Allen issues in? The 35-0 game or the 26-11 game?
The 26-11 game that was 3-3, and they were in field goal position with no time left. And that one, that's the one.
That,
right. And
that,
if you went back and watched the 35-10 game or 38-0 game, it wasn't all that great either. It was the Bills' defense messing up, and that was the game Tua got hurt, where they caused a lot of issues. They had moments, but now they've put it together as a team, you know, and I think that's where, yeah, they figured out exactly how they want to play it on defense and offense, and that's where, you know, they become a real juggernaut here in the AFC.
We know they can beat the Patriots, and we know the Patriots historically, for whatever reason, struggle when they go to Miami.
Yeah.
So week 18 is hardly a sure thing for New England.
No.
The game on Sunday, one of the best games of the weekend. I say that without even having the schedule in front of me for week 17, although I know there are some other great games. Miami at Tennessee has the potential to be a very, very good game,
right.
An impactful game for both teams. And if Miami wins that one, then they have to be taken seriously. And they're becoming that team, kind of like the Colts, where if you're one of the more established powers in the AFC, you're thinking, I really don't want them in this playoff field. You know, it just occurred to me, there's a chance that we will end up with all four teams from the old AFC East.
Yeah, look at that.
Well, no. Four of the five. Forgot about the Jets.
Yeah.
There used to be five teams in the old AFC East. The Colts, the Dolphins, the Patriots, and Bills may all get in. Sorry, Jets. No soup for you this year or pretty much any year in recent history.
It is kind of funny in the fact that, you know, before the year, would anybody have picked three AFC teams to make the play? AFC East teams to make the playoffs? I don't know. Probably not. I'm sure people had Buffalo and Miami. In fact, I think I had Miami on the outside looking in. But yeah, I mean, three teams in the AFC East. I don't know if a lot of people would have called that at this point.
Well, and the Colts weren't a team that many expected to be as good as they've become this year. So some real surprises in the NFL season, and a surprise for me, Tushog. It is a word, although it isn't quite the word that you thought it was.
Right.
We have the definition.
What is it?
And I found the definition. While I'm waiting for the photo to come up, they've promised it to me in the document. Here, a tush hog in the South is an old guy who always finishes fights. A tush hog bar is a bar with these guys in it, and no one starts trouble in there with these guys.
Yeah.
Size or physical appearance has nothing to do with these guys. They are just insane fighters. The name itself comes from the fact that old boars have very long tusks, tush, that they can cut anything up with. The other definition in the Urban Dictionary is totally wrong and would probably be laughed at in the South. I can only imagine what the Urban Dictionary definition is. But you call someone a tush hog, it's a sign of respect and never an insult. So it just sounds like some wiry old crazy guy that will fight anyone and gets in your face so fast that he's gotten you messed up before you even know what's hit you. Which kind of sounds like maybe they should just call it the tush hog defense, because that's kind of what it is.
Yeah, seriously. Hey, it still fits, you know. Yeah, it's the modern day tush hog. You don't want to mess with these guys, but they got some real tushes on them too. So it makes a lot of sense. And yeah, they're doing a lot of fighting and bar scrapping there in the middle of that defense for them. But that's, I had no idea that's what that meaning was. I've never ever heard of it used that way or anything to do with a bar. What are they, bar fighters? They're basically the police for bars.
Yes.
I like that.
Yes. I'm trying to find the other definition that they're referring to just for amusement purposes, and I haven't found it yet, which is good because then I would have a temptation to share it with you and potentially get in trouble. And it's Christmas week. We don't want to get into trouble this week or any week. Let's take a break. When we return, trouble for the 49ers, but good news for that group of their fans who would like to get a glimpse of what life will be like without Jimmy Garoppolo. They may be getting it very soon and possibly for a few weeks. We'll discuss that next on this Tuesday edition of Pro Football Talk Live.
Around any corner, within every battle, and with the dawn of each new day, the threat of the unexpected, the unpredictable, and the unrelenting lies in wait. But Marines will always be there. They are the constant in the chaos. No matter the battlefield, Marines adapt to win, defeating every shifting threat, protecting our nation's future. The few, the proud, the Marines.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
All right, we got some big man touchdowns. How about this one? Connor McDermott. With
man,
the touchdown.
Good play, good escape.
Another look at it. Great drop by Zach Wilson. Rolls to the right, finds Connor McDermott.
Nice.
And it wasn't like he was wide open like the usual big man is when they draw up the play. There was actually a guy there in position to make the play, but stay out of the way of the big man. Stay out of the way of this big man, Lane Johnson. Now that's the wide-ass open big man touchdown we've come to know and love. The block, the peel, and no one out there. Well-designed play. Johnson gets his touchdown. That was an awesome moment there. And then the Dallas Cowboys get in on the act.
Look,
Terrence Steele in that blowout victory over the Washington football team. The big spike. The spike that kind of goes up in the air. I love it when the big guy spikes it and it just kind of dribbles away. And he's happy. And
he's very happy.
Goes over and tries to lift Mike McCarthy up off the ground, but realizes that that's not the easiest task in the world. Big man touchdown. All right. Big problem for the San Francisco 49ers, coming off of that Thursday night game when Jimmy Garoppolo threw a couple of ugly interceptions and Kyle Shanahan kind of defended him, kind of didn't. You know, it's a shame. Week 16, the three best games were played on Thursday and Saturday, and the rest of the games weren't very good. But the Thursday night game between the 49ers and the Titans was a great game, and it may be the last time we see Jimmy Garoppolo for a bit. Jimmy Garoppolo has a chipped bone and a torn ligament in his thumb, according to Schefty, and also NFL media has chimed in on that as well. So there's an issue. And in the second quarter of that loss to the Titans on Thursday, there's a video of him holding his finger as he walked back to the sideline. Let's check it out. There's Jimmy Garoppolo with the old throwbacks, the white on white. I like that. Gets thrown down. I was surprised that wasn't a roughing. We're so used to seeing roughing the passer for anything that's mildly aggressive. I'm surprised it wasn't. And there he is checking out the thumb. To his credit, he kept going, but he had a couple of interceptions. Now, one came before that.
Yeah, that's right.
Another one came after that. And it's Trey Lance time if Jimmy Garoppolo can't play. And there have been plenty of 49ers fans wishing and hoping and praying that they could see what Trey Lance has. And I think the fact we haven't seen him extensively so far this year may be an indictment on the decision to take him instead of the other quarterbacks they could have had after they moved up to number three. We'll find out. We'll find out if he's ready. Kyle Shanahan was saying yesterday how he's looked great. He's had the consistency in practice. He's been around, and Lance is ready to go. And we'll find out. They've got to keep it going. It helped them last night that the Saints lost, but they still have to keep winning if they want to get into the playoffs.
Yeah, no, that's right. They did get a little gift last night, certainly with the Dolphins winning and helping them out there to where you'd think they'd have to really screw it up here not to make the playoffs. I'd be interested, with the Jimmy Garoppolo situation. Yeah. I mean, a chip bone, you can maybe play with. Torn ligament? I don't know. And the thumb? That's got to be tough. I mean, again, the thumb is a pretty important finger there as far as gripping the football and controlling the football. Again, maybe if it's the right ligament, maybe you still can apply pressure and throw the ball effectively enough. Like you said, I mean, again, I know he threw an interception after the torn ligament and thumb injury, there in the third quarter that set up the easy touchdown for the Titans, but made some other good throws too. So I think today it'd probably be the day or tomorrow where we get a gauge of if he threw at practice, all right, then I'm hopeful that he could play on Sunday. That was the first interception we saw. Thumb was fine. Here's a miss to use check. But again, at that point there, he's healthy. So you can't really tell. Now, that's a wobbler down the middle, and that is after the injury. And that was a bad decision and throw and everything. But, yeah, I think today and tomorrow will be the day where I look to go, did we get a report that he was out there at least throwing in pre-practice and doing some stuff? If we don't get anything, I'm going to be thinking we are going to see Trey Lance for sure this weekend.
Got the Houston Texans coming to town on Sunday and then a trip to L.A. to take on the Rams, a team that Kyle Shanahan has owned over the years. So winning the next two games is a real possibility, but the automatic check of the box for the Texans, we found out.
Yeah.
They're the team that couldn't tank straight. They have plenty of reasons to be
Thanks
losing these
nothing.
Leagues. Because I don't know how I understand the argument. You're developing Davis Mills. You're developing other young players. I don't know how much carryover there really is because teams are so dramatically different from one year to the next, and I suspect there's going to be a lot of changes. So whatever progress is made in late December and early January this year, I don't know how much of it is going to lay the foundation for next year for the Houston Texans. We've discussed in the past how beneficial it is to have a high spot, not just in round one, but 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, it carries into the rest of the rounds of the draft. So they have won some games here down the stretch that we didn't expect them to win, and now they could give the 49ers everything they could handle. And especially if it's Trey Lance, and especially if he struggles, maybe the 49ers find themselves in a fight. But either way, they are very much alive in San Francisco, and they are very much a team that the other franchises in the playoffs
That's right.
don't want in. You
no.
don't want the 49ers. No. They are the Colts of the NFC.
No
they
doubt.
Are the team that the established powers are not going to want to see.
No, 100%. I know we were talking about that last week a few times. That would be the team still. Again, I know. Again, we saw, they lost the game the other night against the Tennessee Titans. I think we could sit there in some ways and go, and they kind of blew the game against the Tennessee Titans. I don't think it's like crazy to go, in a lot of ways, they kind of outplayed them and just messed it up. But it shows you just how dangerous they are. You see the potential for their capabilities, like we saw early on in the football game, where they can go down the up and down the field and dominate and be on the doorstep of going up 17-0. But we also saw the issue with the 49ers. I mean, the one thing is when the run game doesn't, you know, continue to dominate, and if Shanahan doesn't have, you know, a ton of tricks up his sleeves in a given week, Jimmy Garoppolo having to carry the team is 50-50, you know, like we saw a few weeks ago in Seattle. Seahawks had a good plan to slow down the run game of the 49ers. There was no Deebo Samuel that day. Oh, we got to rely on Jimmy. Yeah, there were some good throws, but there was two or three throws that are just dumb as hell. There's no other way to say it, and that's why they lose the game. And they lost the game last week because of Jimmy G, period. I mean, you know, I'm mad at him. Ruined my damn friend's Christmas weekend. Guy could have had a nice weekend, enjoyed Christmas Eve and Christmas with the family. Instead, they lost the damn game, and my friend probably was pulling his hair out all weekend. So, yeah, I we'll see. But, like, you know, back to Trey Lance, too, Mike. I'm sorry I was rambling there. It's just like, it is going
to
be interesting.
So the solution to that is to keep rambling.
Well, I was just going to say, because I wanted to get back on point, I just was kind of ranting. Right. But, like,
I'm just giving you a hard time.
I know you are. You're a natural jerk. We know that. But, like, Trey Lance thing is, it is interesting, Mike. You brought it up. You know, yeah, you traded three picks for a guy. He hasn't played. He played a little bit. It was almost like, whoa, that was crazy and raw. Let's stash him away and not anybody see him again for a while. So let's see what kind of improvements he has made if he does get a chance to play, certainly, and see what Shanahan can do around him. That could be fun to watch if he does get that opportunity this weekend.
Lost in the fact that Deebo Samuel was so awesome on Thursday night. He had 32 yards rushing on 5 carries, 159 receiving yards on 9 catches. They didn't get the ball to the other guy who makes the offense go in George Kittle. He was targeted 3 times on the night, 2 catches for 21 yards. So the Titans were able to neutralize him, not Samuel. You take one of those guys away, and maybe that's the formula. You have to deal with one of them. You take one of them away and let the other guy do his thing, and maybe you can count on some sort of mistake at some point in the game from Jimmy Garoppolo.
Right.
And look, Kyle worked very hard at his post-game press conference to not blame Jimmy Garoppolo.
He really
is kind of a strange dynamic there. And I feel like he needs an intervention. Let me try to play amateur psychologist here. I feel like he's got some sort of a deep-seated fear that if he gives up on Jimmy Garoppolo, he's going to go somewhere else and become better than he's ever been in his career. And that's just going to make this quarterback misadventure that they've been on for the past 5 years even worse, because they said no thanks to Patrick Mahomes. They said no thanks to Tom Brady. They stuck with Jimmy G. They gave up 3 first-round picks and a 3rd-round pick to get Trey Lance. I just feel like he doesn't want to let go of Jimmy Garoppolo because of that possibility that Garoppolo goes elsewhere. And I don't know where elsewhere would be at this point, because the Patriots have Mac Jones.
Yeah.
But just this fear he lands up somewhere else. Let's say Josh McDaniels becomes a head coach somewhere, and McDaniels ends up with Garoppolo, and Garoppolo ends up being better than he's ever been in his life. Then you look worse for giving up on the guy prematurely. I don't get it. I don't get it, because the outside objective observer looks at it and says, you can do better, and this guy's holding back what could be a very special team. And I don't think that's a hot take. I think a lot of people would agree with it. 49ers fans get upset because they're living in the middle of it, and they're stuck with it.
Right.
But on the outside, you look at it and say, there's a weak link here that is holding back this 49ers chain.
100%. 100%. I mean, it's always Shanahan having to manufacture brilliant ways to kind of make him look good. I don't disagree with you there at all. You know, yes, can he run an offense and do some things where you go, okay, that's good. Yes. I mean, he's played, you know, he's seen the field and been on the field a lot to understand what defenses are doing. But yeah, there's a limit to what you can expect from him. And it that's where, you know, you look at, like, you know, the top 10, top 15-ish quarterbacks where you go, okay, wait, the run game's not working today. No big deal. Okay, our quarterback's still pretty damn good. We can rely on him to make throws and carry us through the day here. You know, it's few and far between when it comes to Garoppolo that way. You can kind of trust that, hey, he'll make some plays and do some things. I just hope he doesn't really do one of those Jimmy G bonehead dumb stuffs. You know, that's what I hope. And that's kind of the way they've been living. And, you know, we've seen it to where every now and then when that dumb stuff comes up, you always bring it up. You go back to that Vikings playoff game. And it's like, oh, crap. He's throwing the ball down the middle into a mosh pit of people. Let's start handing it off. And having to deal with that is not easy. Certainly not. You know, Mike, I don't know if it's the fear of that or like what you're talking about, the fear of him going somewhere else being successful. Or sometimes I get the sense of like, you know, Lance isn't totally 100% ready. He is raw still. He doesn't want to throw him out there and have him not look good. And then people go, what the hell did you do trading three first rounders for it? But I also get the sense that like, you know, there's a real backing and liking of Jimmy G in the locker room that I think probably scares Shanahan to a degree. I don't know that. I got no inside info on that. But that's just reading between the lines how I feel a little bit.
Well, we know George Kittle's been a very loud
right
and an obvious proponent of Jimmy Garoppolo. That may be part of it. Part of it also may be, we know that Kyle Shanahan wants quarterbacks who run the offense exactly the way he wants it to be run. You could argue Jimmy G does that. It's just sometimes he makes some bad throws.
That's right. That's right.
He makes the right reads. He does everything he's supposed to do up until the point where the time comes to consistently deliver the ball accurately. That's where the flaw kicks in, and I think Kyle thinks through time that that will eventually iron itself out. I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out why this relationship continues nearly a year past the point where we assumed it was going to end when they made that big move from number 12 to number 3 in the draft to get their next quarterback, who, again, we may see on the field extensively this week if Kyle Shanahan isn't able to get Jimmy Garoppolo ready to go. By the way, you talked about how Kyle wanted to tear his hair out over Christmas weekend. The misadventures of John Lynch at Christmas Eve Mass didn't help. This was like this bizarre little, you know, you're hanging out with your family on Christmas Eve, and yeah, I was checking my phone more than I should. Apparently John Lynch was too, because he was at church. He accidentally and unknowingly liked a tweet. This is the tweet that came out of nowhere. There was no context. There was no backstory. Just apparently, while at Christmas Eve Mass with my family, I accidentally and unknowingly liked a tweet. Never intended to and remain a huge believer in Jimmy. Merry Christmas to everyone. Oh, Merry Christmas indeed. So the tweet that he liked, it was a guy looking through the window of a plane from the outside looking in, and the comment was something along the lines of, just leave Jimmy in Nashville. That's the tweet.
Not the one you want to like. Yeah. Right.
Accidentally and inadvertently liked while in Christmas Eve Mass. It is definitely not a Christmas Eve miracle. I don't know why your phone is in any position where you can be accidentally liking tweets in Mass. So the whole thing was a little bit bizarre. He was very lucky it kind of happened on a quiet Friday night, and they didn't play this weekend because they had played Thursday night, so it blew over. But that was just kind of a weird little twist to everything that's been going on with the 49ers and Jimmy G. And again, through it all, they're capable of being extremely dangerous. They looked like a potential Super Bowl team. And when they were bullying the Titans around in the first half,
right,
I thought, man, you know, boy, I got this one wrong. The 49ers are ready to make their
text,
move.
Four-letter words, Titans, four-letter words, Titans, four-letter words, Titans. And then there you were. I'm sitting there at the end of the game going, oh, my gosh, look at this crap. They're going to win the damn football game, and Florio's going to get the victory. Damn you, Florio. Damn you.
I tweeted at one point during the game in my frustration because I picked the Titans to win, and they looked so bad. I tweeted, are the Titans frauds? Discuss. So, of course, when they won the game,
right,
I get all the indignant Titans fans and members of the media. It's amazing to me how members of the media group that cover a given team, and I'm not picking on the Titans here, it's a dynamic throughout the league. Like, people who are supposed to be somewhat objective act like they're fans, act like they've got like they work for the team now, and they get indignant and they get upset when you criticize the team they cover. It's like, you don't work for the team. You've just been assigned to cover that team by your paper. You're still supposed to be a little objective, so back off a little bit, okay, please. But it was aggressive. Thankfully, it was Christmas, and that died down pretty fast. But I wanted the Titans to win. I was upset. I was as upset as a Titans fan would be.
Yeah.
They were getting outclassed. I was stunned that they came back and tied that game, and even more stunned that they won it.
Yeah, well, you know, again, you know, I think that's where it goes back to the Jimmy G thing. And again, that's where they need Kittle and Deebo Samuel to be both hitting on all cylinders, and Shanahan's got to find ways to get them the ball even more and be healthy at the running back position, because it's iffy with Jimmy G, period. You just don't know. You know, again, there they are, like you said, they're on the doorstep of blowing the game out here. Well, we're going to go up 17-0. And you throw an interception to clearly a covered George Kittle. And then, of course, the interception of the third quarter that jump-started the Titans' offense, they were huge mistakes. They definitely were. I mean, Mike, I was sitting there, you know, for, like, points bet, right? I'm going, oh, man, you know, I'm picking the 49ers to win, and I thought it was going to be a Kittle night. And the night started, and Deebo Samuel could have went on fire, and I was like, oh, no, it's going to be a Deebo night. The Titans have taken away Kittle. They're not going to be able to take away Deebo, and this is going to be an issue. And, of course, it wasn't good for me all around, let alone losing the damn game to you that way. But that is the big question mark with them. There's no team in the NFC with the 49ers where they're going to get on the field and they're going to be like, we're going to look at it or talk about it in a matchup and go, well, we're really worried that they physically won't be able to match up. They're going to be able to physically up front match up with anybody. We know Shanahan and the XOs are going to match up with anybody. It's just, is there going to be that team that, yes, like you said, takes away a Kittle or slows down the run game to where now, hey, Jimmy, these last three quarters, you're going to have to play good football and you can't turn it over and cost us the game. That's still, we've been talking about this for 3 years straight. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's still the same conversation around Garoppolo.
And look, all that said, they're in the sixth seed right now.
Yep.
And if they take care of business the next couple of weeks, they will be fine. And we see what they do to the Rams. We don't know what the Rams are going to be playing for in Week 18.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
the other weird wrinkle to all this. We don't know how many teams are going to have their position set in stone when the dust settles on Week 17 to the extent that they can treat Week 18 as a de facto bye, but maybe the 49ers get lucky that way as well. First order of business, though, take care of the Texans. Presumably they can, but we presume the Chargers could as well. So who knows what these Texans are capable of doing. Let's go ahead and take a break. When we return, we will be just about at the point where the window opens on this first ever head start on interviewing assistant coaches from other teams while there's time left in the regular season. But you have to have a coaching vacancy. There are two. I'm surprised there aren't more, but there could be. We'll be discussing that when PFT Live continues right after this.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.